Dear Bhante, dear sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, it's time for our day's Dhamma talk. May everyone settle down for the talk and give the consent with three times, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavato arahato සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු ආරහතු සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ දසුත්තරං අවක්ඛාමි ධම්මං නිබ්බානපත්තිය දුක්ඛ සන්ත කිරියාය සබ්බ ගන්තප්පමෝචනන්ති Dear venerable sisters and brothers, Dhamma friends, as you know, we are in a residential retreat and it is 7 days, it is running 7 days, and the value of such a time, I am not going to emphasize because everyone knows how much it is valuable for us to have such a gathering, especially as a residential, in a residential retreat. And whenever we get this kind of an opportunity, that itself is not enough to achieve the final goal. So far, we managed to come to a solitude place and still further, we may come to a desirable, conducive posture. And then onward, we have to have furthermore restraint. So once that is achieved, as we have done already, we have to continue with this restraint. And there are the Buddha himself indicate how much we must facilitate our time and our view in order to achieve the final aim, final goal. According to the traditional way, according to the tradition, the Buddha tried himself as a Buddha to be so much of aeons of time. And once he achieved this omniscient knowledge, when he reflected back, he found the profundity of his practice as well as the Dhamma, what he came to know. And he had a fair doubt whether another person can undergo that kind of ardent practice to achieve the final goal, what you call the Nibbana, or the emancipation. And there was some hesitation, because he knows the profundity. But after, as a second thought, he thought, I will proclaim, those who wish may strive. With that only, he proclaimed his teaching, and in our tradition, there are some another kind of Buddha or self-enlightened being they can't proclaim. We call Paccheka Buddha. And the difference is so-called Paccheka Buddha can understand, realize without the help of a second person, but he can't proclaim. And so Sammasambuddha is a special case. He tries his best to share with us. That is how this whole Tipitaka came into being. And they are listening to Dhamma or listening to his teaching is very, very important. Therefore, Buddha himself indicated whenever someone is aiming his time towards that end, he must facilitate his own present view with five aspects. Panchai angei bhikkave anukkahita sammaditti chetopala vimuttyachoti chetopala anisansacha panyapala vimuttyacha patkoti panyapala apalani sansacha. So these five aspects individually we must take care. Not only that, as a group also we have to take care. They are called facilities. So we have to facilitate it in five ways. So back in Sri Lanka, whenever I conduct a retreat like that, I always take time to go in detail, of course some detail, to these facilities. And the first and foremost in these facilities, the Buddha mentioned, is that precepts or moral responsibilities. So right at the beginning, we administer precepts. So we are abiding by these precepts. Analyzing this aspect, Most Venerable Mahasi Siyadu from Burma, he says, or he asked the question, what is the bare minimum amount of precepts? He said, there is no such a recommendation. Maybe 5 precepts, maybe 8 precepts, or 9 precepts, or 10 precepts, or as a gone forth as a samanera, 10 precepts, or as a bhikkhu, or bhikkhuni, so much of upasampada precepts. But for this retreat, we took 8 precepts as the norm. So if you have any kind of a misunderstanding or lack of understanding or any difficulties, please come out with and make it clear why these 8 precepts and how they are facilitating our further restraint like concentration and the wisdom. So we must understand a basic thing as a preliminary norm for the retreat is 8 precepts or sila anugahita, and then come into this sutta anugahita. That means we have to listen to Dhamma. The effort you have taken to earn this the presidential retreat is not enough. Upon that, you have to listen to Dhamma directly to the Buddha or to one of his disciples or senior meditators. That is how for the last 2,600 years the lineage came down, and we believe we are listening to the authentic teaching of the Buddha. So you have to have that kind of a belief, and upon that listening was the only way the Buddha accepted as the normal way of communicating towards the Nibbana. There are some other ways, but the Buddha never appreciated them as noble as teaching or listening. So therefore we are called Savaka. Savaka means we are listeners. The Buddha is a desaka, is the person is preaching. So we are learning by listening. And the third aspect for the success of our retreat is the discussion. The Buddha always asked, the listening and teaching is one-way program, and discussion, it might be either way. Participants also can raise questions or make statements, and open discussion is a quite invited thing in the teaching of the Buddha. In the other holy scripts, it is somewhat doubtful whether you can question the holy script. But the Buddha, in his first discourse in the Digha Nikaya, he says, whatever it may be, you must have your inquiring mind or inferential knowledge, rational knowledge. If you feel that is reasonable to your reasoning, only then only you will put into practice. So don't accept by other means other than by questioning and have an open dialogue and discussion. So that is why in the daily timetable we have included a session for question and answers. So I would introduce this further as a discussion as well as any common interviews. So you have to make use that time to have this third facility, namely the discussion. Then the fourth aspect is you have to, with that knowledge, theoretical knowledge and the discussion and the help of the precepts, you have to maintain, continue the concentration restraint. That is to say, the precepts or morality in the Buddhist presentation, they will talk about and deal with the physical and verbal restraint. And once that is achieved to a certain extent, to a satisfactory extent, then you are, only then you are qualified to go into the concentration restraint, whereby you try to keep the mind one-pointed or focused to one neutral, verifiable object. As far as mind is face-to-face with that, aligned with that, you can feel a particular kind of peace, particular kind of solitude or lack of tension, lack of frustration. So it is something tangible, so something you have to earn. And that is happening upon the moral restraint, and therefore that you are earning then and there within the retreat. For that, you practice sitting meditation, walking meditation, and be mindful on your day-to-day activities, slowly, mindfully, silently, keeping the noble silence. And when and where that mindfulness come up to this, join with this concentration, one-pointedness, you can penetrate into some of the phenomena, some of the experience. So when and where you make use this mindfulness together with concentration, that penetrating power will slowly let you know the nature, how things are in its own accord, or three characteristics of the nature, that is changing nature. And when and where you are to see this changing nature, it appear like disappointment, or boring, or monotonous, or fearful, uncertain, as a new area, that is natural. But if you are together with the precepts, and if you are together with the theoretical knowledge, and if you are endowed with question and answers, and the discussion, and the concentration, there you can look at this frustration, look into this boredom, look into this monotony, look into this fearfulness, uncertainty, completely different from the different perspective, and you, otherwise you will consider suffering, but now, with this proper approach, this changing nature, you are not taking as the suffering, you take as the truth of suffering. It becomes a truth, universal truth. So you are searching for the pleasure, ceases to exist. It will never happen unless otherwise you have these early facilities, restraint of morality, and your theoretical knowledge, book knowledge or listening, and your possibility or chance to discuss each other, and your concentration. Then your perspective towards the boredom, towards the monotony, towards the uncertainty, towards the fearfulness, you are ready to look from the different perspective. That is how the wrong reflection will change into a radical kind of a reflection or wise reflection. They are your personality, your likings and dislikings, your habituation will be reshuffled. Of course, it is not doing by itself. You have to make use of the chance and look into it in a different perspective. And there you find the non-governable nature, non-controllable nature is not a punishment. You can make use of it in a productive way, and you can understand things are changing. It is nothing to relate it with your weakness, or it is not a punishment. It is not a reason to be discouraged. So you may looking at it as the truth of suffering, and then your mindset is quite ready to see things as they are and to consider them as non-governable, and your worries regarding these non-governable things will be ceases to exist. It takes long time. The last aspect takes long time, but in a retreat we are not assuring that kind of a thing. Only thing, we give some tools you to work with and some kind of association, some kind of introduction about the truth. And things are happening repetitively, happening in a cyclic way. So slowly, slowly, with the preparedness for this changing nature, with the preparedness of this acceptance of the truth, of suffering as truth, you will be slowly, slowly evolving. So this evolution, specifically along the Dhamma, the Buddha prescribed, may take 7 years. If you are skillful in these early 5 facilities, and if you are with the quick wit, you can reduce into 7 days. That means within a retreat life. And some other places, the Buddha mentioned, if you can have the clear view, clear perspective with practice, if you get the preparedness, diligence, the vigilance morning, by evening, the achievement can happen as a same-day service. So it is up to you. So this much is regarding this Anugrahita Sutta, what is my own responsibility in the retreat and what is our common responsibilities as far as the logistics are concerned. So we have to maintain it. I am not going to repeat. This is the starting talk whereby we remember these 5 Anugrahita facilities. So when and where are you go back home, or you go back to the day-to-day activities also, if you can get a touch of it, if you can get a kind of an experience, even though it is not accelerated and with the momentum like in the retreat, you can use appropriate way the experience you gain, and slowly, slowly you have to make sure these all experiences you accumulate, you gather, continue to progress, unless otherwise you are not too much talkative. The words and the verbal behavior is the first and foremost thing you have to take care of once you become a little bit familiar with this progress. And the second part is that your activities in day-to-day life don't get engaged with unwanted things unless otherwise some are invited, or unless otherwise it is for the utility value. The third aspect is your livelihood. Whenever these things become somewhat clear, you have to reconsider and you have to rethink about your livelihood, then only this acceleration will be uninterrupted. So it's a big challenge. For my experience, it is very difficult to prescribe a unique common livelihood as a group or as a team. But you as an individual, you can try. That opportunity is always open. So ultimately it is going to reduce to here, now, I am. Even though we are sit together, even though we are do walking meditation together, even though we are participating into this retreat together, whenever I am thinking about my livelihood, I have to rethink and adjust in an efficient way, it takes time. So therefore it is always with mistakes. Don't think that I can do with the least frictional part without any friction, no. Always it is with mistake, and you can see whenever it is happening again and again, the amount of mistakes reduces. Learn the least frictional path. And that is where we need the dispensation of the Buddha, because we have some role models. That is the fortunate thing. And not only you always must follow role models, you yourself must be original person to put these restraint into your life and adjust your livelihood so that you will be a pioneer in this game. That is the end of the path. You are not following anyone. You know the best. At the beginning, of course, through listening and doing group action and all the kind of things, we are following suit. But later you may understand what is the best way for you. In that respect, Venerable Sariputta, that is the general of Dhamma, during the time of the Buddha, contemporary time of the Buddha, he assimilated the particular sutta in this Dasuttara Sutta in Digha Nikaya, long sayings. After listening so much of sermons of the Buddha and having so genius kind of knowledge, he compiled all the knowledges what the Buddha prescribed epistemologically and put into a graph 10 by 10, and adjusted all the teaching into 100 points. So if we wish to understand the teaching of the Buddha in a gist, these 100 points, of course it's a big study, I accept it, going to give an overall coverage about the whole teaching of the Buddha. Hence, Venerable Sariputta is telling, Dasuttaram pavakkhami dhammam nibbana patya. He says, in growing groups from 1 to 10, I'll teach Dhamma for the gaining of the Nibbana. So he is the only person authorized or having the capacity to put in such a graphic way, on a tabulated way, next to the Buddha. And lucky enough, it happened during the time of the Buddha. So if it is something wrong, Buddha would have proclaimed, or others can verify. So that gave a kind of a hint, kind of a rehearsal for the other arahants, enlightened beings, to put the Dhamma into a graphic form, into a formulation in the first synod, first gathering, 100 days after the great passing away of the Buddha. By that time, Venerable Sariputta also passed away. So he gave the basic guidelines how to maintain Dhamma. So we are so lucky, by looking at it, we can understand the way he organized it. Suppose one link is missing, by looking at the before and after, above and below, we can guess what is the part missing. By looking at the Tipitaka, we can pick fairly, correctly, and fulfill it. So therefore, this is the first time in the human history put the knowledge into a systematic way, epistemological way. Before that, there was a lot of accumulation of knowledge, but there were no grammar, there are no presentation. So it's very difficult to maintain from generation to generation. But this kind of the Dasutra Sutta kind of a presentation is one way of trying, not only for your liberation, but how to maintain the truth generation to generation. So Venerable Sariputta is asking 10 questions and giving himself answer in 10 question first and answer in 1 Dhamma point. Again the same question, asking in 2 points. And again the same set of question, answering in 3 points. Same set of question, 4 points, 5 points, 6 points, 7 points, 8 points and 9 points. Likewise, the 100 questions and 100 answers. So for this particular retreat in Chuan Yin Monastery in Carmel, we are going to take the third aspect of the third questions. Which three things are to be thoroughly understood, thoroughly known? So Venerable Sariputta is raising a question. The Buddha in Samaya taught the candidates, there are three things the yogis or practitioners must be thorough. What are these? And then he himself gives the common answer, three feelings, three kinds of feelings. And that is the way he maintained the content of the Dhamma or the topics. So we are going to go into this aspect of feeling in this particular retreat. So theoretically, you have to understand the relationship with the other Dhamma, how the feelings come into our life in our meditative way, and how to understand them in theoretical way. And not only that, we can understand how non-meditators behave in this way with respect to feelings. The feelings, according to the teaching of the Buddha, not come under the topic of materiality or matter. So it is the first thing Buddha teaching in the immaterial sphere. Whenever you take the four foundation of mindfulness, the famous sutta in the Sattara Satipatthana, four foundation of mindfulness, first the Buddha give the value of understanding the materiality or corporeality, the concrete thing that is easy to verify. That is what we do in sitting meditation. We try to maintain our body, namely in sitting posture, without doing anything willfully, volitional way, conscious way. And look at, of course, with the closed eyes, what is happening. Whatever may be prominent, whatever may be conspicuous, we keep track with it. So that appearing things, the first we give the attention, the preliminary attention is for the materiality. We call the hardness, softness, expansion, contraction, and fluidity and cohesiveness, heat, cold, that kind of matter, materialistic type. And that is to develop certain amount of mindfulness and the focusing power. So whenever you sit, your main aim is not to do anything, but to be diligent, but to be vigilant, to see what is happening in your mind. And that we call solitude. You have to take a conscious decision not to do something consciously. Therefore, you are just looking at involuntary actions, metabolic action, what is happening, and that is a starting point to understand who am I. We understand it through materiality. So how much time, or how much thought moments, or how many seconds or minutes you can keep the track in this materiality is a questionable. Because our mind is not much restrained. The naturally mind is like a mad monkey, jumping from one to the other. It gets complicated with the willful action and volitional action and unvolitional action, conscious and unconscious action, and get mixed up with materiality and non-materialistic part, mental part. So it is very difficult to keep track. So you are compromising, you are restraining just to keep the track with non-volitional activities, metabolic activities, and reduce it to materiality. The mind is not happy because it always chasing behind the complexities. So whenever you try to reduce into the non-volitional, materialistic action, it is natural to come out with that complaint. It is boring, it is monotonous, it is not dramatic. So therefore you must restrain that restraint. We are not recognized as the moral restraint. This is called concentration restraint. Whenever so much of things happen, can I advert my mind? Can I avenue my mind? Can I keep my mind face to face with what is with the least amount of complication, least amount of, we can say, defilements? That is how the materiality come into being. The advantage of keeping the track with materiality is that is verifiable. Any of the heat, cold, stiffness, tension, movements, expansion, contraction happens, easy to understand whether it is a mind-made, conceptual, or it is realistic. So as far as the reality, or as far as the verifiability is concerned, the materialistic part is very important, and in the meditation becomes scientific. You can keep on advance with reductionism. When 1001 objects happens, you try to restrain to a volitional, non-volitional part, just metabolic action, and to keep the track as much as possible with materiality. That is to say, four elements. In sitting, usually we are specializing air element, expansion, contraction, and holding capacity. Maybe with the breath, inhalation, exhalation, or expansion, contraction of your tummy, or your whole body. Or you feel how you touch, get the touch of the sitting. Pressure points. The air element is more prominent in in-breath and out-breath and the rising and falling of your stomach or tummy. And to keep the track, how many breaths you can keep face-to-face, how many risings and fallings you can keep face to face is not in our default system, because our mind is always extrovert. So you have to put into introvert. That is why it is being recommended to keep your eyes closed and the body is not moving consciously. Whatever the happening unconscious or in a metabolic way, no problem, you try to keep the tracking. And there you will understand the materiality. So when and where you manage to forget about the rest of the world and to keep the attention with one single fold object like expansion, contraction, inhalation, exhalation like, you get a chance to go deep penetrating into that particular phenomena, that particular element. And more you practice, more you keep the object face to face, you become qualified to see the evolution, the changing nature, the transitional nature of the object. And more you go into this changing nature, more and more you get a distance from the worldly affairs, outwardly affairs, and for that you can keep the technique of noting. You label, you note the desired object, that is in here the materiality, it is here the non-volitional activity, the action without much of your consciousness. And when you, of course, the noting is a conscious action, when you keep on practicing, whenever the alignment happens, you can see the materiality, even though you consider as a solid, hard fact, but whenever it goes to the reductionist way, is going to increase its dynamism and going to its active nature very fast as you zoom in. That is why it is called a reductionist system or scientific way. So first day you may go a little bit into the depth and second and again come back again in the next sitting. Next effort you will go a little further. Likewise, more and more you go there. First and foremost, you understand by keeping the object in view with its preparedness of your mind to see the changing nature. It is, of course, disheartening. It appears like a disappointment. It appears like a failure because you think sometimes or you misperceive the changing nature of the object is lack of mindfulness. Or lack of concentration, or lack of focus, or one of your personal mistakes. Imagine if you can report it as and when it happened, without adding your commentary, without adding your preconceived ideas, then in the discussion you may understand. When and where you focus the object far away, materiality far away, appear like solid, appear like as a unit. But when and where you come closer, when and where you go penetrate, zoom in, they are not single unit. There are 1001 tiny, tiny particles, each and every particle. It is non-local. It is not in a single place, even for a split second. So this perspective from the far away and the vague observation as a unit, or very close, diligent, very vigilant, immediate observation, going to change the perspective. And of course we are attributing to the object that you are observing. And how much time will it take to understand while you are observing the changing nature of the object? Basically, it is because your mind is changing, not only the observed object, but observing mind also changing. For that, you must have so much of open-mindedness. That is what we lack. And if you can give this knowledge, theoretical knowledge, to a young child, and if he or she going to look at the object, keep one object view with mindfulness and focus, they are much open than we elderly people. That is because of our conditioning, stereotype observation. Whenever a beloved thing, focused thing become changing, we get challenged, frightened. That is why we must have enough faith, enough knowledge, theory understanding, and ready for repetitive mistakes. That is, we call trial and error method. For that, you must be very humble, very innocent, to do it again and again. But till you know how to report it, how to relate it to another person, your knowledge will never get galvanized. It will never get reinforced. So therefore, early part of our meditation is kind of a group action. That is why Venerable Sariputta is taking this kind of discourses and try to share. Don't get discouraged, don't get bored. Reduce first to a materiality, kaya, kaya anupasivirati. Look at your body as a representative of the materiality, and whatever the thing prominent, whatever the thing conspicuous at that given time, take this as the access point and look at it and see how quickly, or look at it openly, how quickly it is going to change. Don't attribute that change into your weakness or something to be discouraged, something to see a weakness of your mindfulness or concentration. But instead, you should go prepared to earn that preparedness, how many sittings you have to continue, how many days you have to continue. It depends. Depends upon our stereotype mind. If you go with open-minded, the phenomena itself will not take time. It's so quick. And your mind also, very flexible, it's a plasticity. It's there. But if you wish not to see it, if you are ignorant, if you are adamant, or hard, the case hardening, that is what you call the ignorance. So to see your ignorance through your ignorant mind itself is a radical kind of a reflection. So when and where you are to see materiality, the focus materiality, that is called ajjata aramana, your object that you have selected, and to keep on practicing, while practicing, to see it is changing and go prepared and see the changes from changing one to the other, evolving, metamorphosizing. And when it is happening, you see there is a kind of a universal law. That's a mind work in a universal law. It is not your mind. It is not your materiality. It is not your knowledge. You are merging, you are connecting to this universal law, principle. More and more you merge, your identity, self-identity get dissolved. And your conceit get dissolved. And your effort to get the lion's share, the bigger share kind of thing, dissolved. That's also kind of a threat for uninstructed people. So by listening, by writing our interview reports, and by keeping the mind open, we are evolving towards the evolving towards the innocence, evolving towards the simplicity. So some people say it is, you are learning the childlike psychology, going back to the child age. So we can say it is not doing, but instead learning how not to do something, just to observe. Not learning, but de-learning process, just to accept what you see and let the things to evolve according to its own accord. And report it as you see, not what you expect to happen, what should, but you learning the art of reporting as it is. This is the way we are using the materiality before going to mentality. Once that materiality teach you, once the materiality give the lesson to your mindfulness, and the once mindfulness is ready and it's open, then and only then you are qualified to go into the immaterial aspects. And first and foremost, you are met up with that kind of preparedness is the feeling. That is why in the second part of the Satipatthana or Four Foundation of Mindfulness, first you have to master, you have to gain the familiarity with this changing nature and its inflicting nature, suffering kind of thing, and non-governability. Once you gain that kind of a first-hand experience with the materiality, then you are, the journey is not finished. Slowly, the meditation itself will open the doors to the immaterial part that is called feelings, and that feelings also you can't consider it as a one single unit. Within feelings, it is multivarious. Different kind of feelings are there. Just like rejecting the changing nature, just like we are rejecting the inflicting nature, out of these old feelings, the civilized person is always chasing behind one particular kind of a feeling, and whenever it is not there, he becomes frustrated, tensed, disappointed. The feeling he sought after is called pleasure. So therefore it is called, we are working with the pleasure principle. Whenever you are confronted with unpleasant situation, you are always depressed, always disappointed. But in the meditation, pleasurable to unpleasurable, they are adjectives, but you are dealing with feelings. Can you, for the time being, leave aside these adjectives and understand the difference between materiality and mentality? Understand the corporeality and feelings, it's a research. It's open research, but we never do, unless otherwise we come to a retreat like that and explain it in an adventurous way. And if the person also go with open-minded and to feel as such, then you understand the feeling of the human. You become human. Before adding the adjective, you try to understand this is not materiality, this is mentality. And mentality also have a number of facets. As for the feeling itself is, as a subject, it has multifaceted. Can we understand the feeling from the materiality and rest of the other mental part? And there only you can understand your capacity in your mind. Otherwise, you are just the donkey behind the carrot, always chasing behind the carrot. You don't know the other possibility. You never look at them from the different perspectives. You never share with others. And therefore, your capacity in the mind, capacity in the brain, never exploit. So with the knowledge of materiality, with certain amount of familiarity with mindfulness, with little bit of focusing power, whenever you go into the mental aspects, you can go deep and deep into that, and there you understand the human mind. Don't think that you are going to understand your mind. There's no such a thing. It's a great human mind. So there you become a universal being. Feelings are the feelings. They have no female feeling and the male feeling. There is no young feeling and the middle-aged feeling and old-age feeling. There's no West and the East. There's no Buddhist and non-Buddhist. All the sectarianism coming out of this ignorance, because you are not given a open-hearted exploration into the feeling. If you go there, you can understand what a nice world. It's very green than what you think. And you can look at all the other non-living things also. In a childlike way, everything is fresh. So when that happens, whenever you become aware, whenever you become open to feelings without these boundaries and sectarianism, the rejuvenation process, you are fresh to the next moment, to feel the next moment, and you appear like a newly born baby, without any labeling, without a sectarianism, without any selection. That makes complete difference. And again, you can come back to your all set of values and perceptions and labels, and then that we call lack of mindfulness, or not in a meditative mode. And next day, again in the sitting, you go to the materiality, again to the feeling sphere, and you find it is waiting till you come. But one point I would like to stress here, daily you must start meditation as a beginner. Person who do not have mindfulness, do not have concentration, do not have familiarity with the materiality, and everything to readjust from the scraps. And when and where our mind becomes somewhat mindful, the focusing power, when and where you know what is the object you've taken as the primary object, and how to deal with the other secondary objects, so-called wandering thoughts, and then only you are qualifying yourself to go deep into the immaterial part. And that is, for my experience, it is naturally happening. How to facilitate it? That is what you must do, experimenting. And don't rush into that before you become qualified, before you gather all the preliminary tools. So you must daily accept the beginner's mind while in walking, while in sitting, and while doing day-to-day activities, and ultimately you may find not only so-called meditating modes, even in the day-to-day activities, all of a sudden, this power line can get straightened. You get quick mindfulness and face-to-face with the event or phenomena, and kind of a momentary concentration happen, deep penetration can happen. So that indicates your past memory or your trial and error. So therefore you try to maintain your regular timetable and practice the best. And meanwhile, specifically in a retreat like here, or specifically after 2-3 days, when the mood comes, I would say it's a mindful mood rather than meditative mood, you could try to keep mindfulness intact. And whenever the things get aligned, you get into very deep understanding, In Zen Buddhism, they call Satori, quick enlightenment. And they are happening in 1001. And after long series only, your mind becomes ready for complete reshuffling. And it is none of your business. Only thing you have to keep is to keep the mindfulness intact without expecting any kind of a results, without result-oriented kind of thing. And do it as a child learning the language. You know how difficult for an adult to learn a language. But how the child is learning the mother tongue without any effort. So therefore, we are learning in the first few days, specifically for the beginners, how to make use of these tools and how to make use of this opportunity and the phenomena. And when you are slowly, slowly progressing, the momentum will explain the progress. So therefore, we are going to take this subject of feeling into threefold way as the sutta suggests. Today I just managed to introduce it in as one single unit, away from the materiality, hope to go further as time permits. And for that basic qualification you need is keep the mindfulness intact. As far as you are mindful, there's a cumulative effect from material to the mentality, and try to keep it from the morning waking to the sleep. Whatever the posture you are, keep the mindfulness so that you prepare your mind to learn immaterial part. And with that point, I would like to sum up the talk today. Thank you very much for listening.